One thing about me is I got really drunk in my family vacay in Montreal. My uncles and aunts and parents were upstairs. They were sleeping when my cousin and I decided to get drunk. Like really, really drunk. I think I had about 4 triple whiskeys. So then I started to black out. Then I went to bed. But I didn't tell my cousin. He didn't know. He was just waiting for me, saying, "Where did he go?" So I stumbled to my room and I plop on the bed. I was sharing the room with my sis and her BF. They were sleeping when they heard me just go bleh. I flung myself sideways so I could puke onto the floor. Instantly, my roomies woke up and they noticed what was happening. I was saying, "I'm sober, I'm totally sober. I swear I was just using my body as a mop, just spreading all the stuff around." Earlier in Ottawa, we had eaten Chinese, so there were bits of rice everywhere. I don't think I need to get into more detail. Then I ran to the shower where I fell asleep. It was a really long time. I was wrinkly. But then somehow the next morning, I woke up naked. I was so confused. My parents and my cousin still don't know. I really hope they don't listen to this. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to this fresh new episode of the Strandcast. Episode 2, the spooky session. Ooh, we're about to set a record. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not going to get too excited. You should hold your breath. I could die between now and then. I'm going to be recounting a lot of superstitions that result in death, so I'm not really doing anything for me and my chances, but you know, anything for the pod, as I say, I've never said that, but anything for the pod, as I will begin to say. I'm also going to be scaring a lot of spirits, or hopefully I'm scaring them, but I'm probably just going to be angering them with a lot of these stories and superstitions I'm going to be telling. A lot of this is, you know, my Filipino background, and it's really interesting to see how, you know, my culture has kind of picked up a lot of different superstitions. I see a lot of similarities with Chinese luck. There's also a lot of, you know, indigenous foundations with our beliefs. There's a lot of different indigenous peoples within the Philippines, and I only come from one of them, and it's interesting to see the different variations between regions. So our different, you know, monsters and spirits and kind of just like belief systems is really interesting, and a lot of our superstition is rooted in that, and a lot of our spooky stories are rooted in that. And then there's also a very interesting syncretization with Catholicism, because, you know, we're a majority Catholic country, and somehow these beliefs had to evolve and flow around, you know, colonization, the scariest thing of them all. But these superstitions and these beliefs, you know, some of them are myths, some of them to me are truths, things that I will not break, things I would rather not hazard because, you know, I value my life, have had a really big impact on my behavior and how I do things and, you know, what I get scared of and how I treat different rituals. Because a lot of these superstitions are very specific and kind of weird, kind of funny. Some are worrying, but maybe that's just me. But hopefully at the very end, just, you know, kind of interesting and provides a new insight. So one of the biggest impacts superstition has had on my life has literally started from birth, or even pre-birth, because there's a lot of pregnancy superstitions. But when I was born and my parents were deciding what to name me, superstition impacted that. They took into consideration a very common belief, or a common belief amongst different cultures, that the number 13 is unlucky. So when they were picking out my first and middle name, it couldn't have 13 letters. So for reference, my name is Jericho, J-E-R-I-C-O, so not spelled like the ancient city with an H. And my middle name is Miguel, so that's another 6-letter name. So with 7 letters in my first name and 6 letters in my middle name, that couldn't happen because I would have a 13-letter long name, which would predestine me for death, probably. Like a lot of these superstitions end up in. So the easiest letter for my parents to knock off, and you know, it doesn't really impact the phonetics or really anything in my name, is the H. Although it has impacted my Google Docs autocorrect, but that's okay. They didn't know that that would have existed yet. I don't blame them at all. Every time I get a red line, I am lying. But it also happened to my cousin. My aunt and my uncle took that into consideration when he was being named. So he got an extra letter on his name so it could be bumped up to 14, because that was it was easier for him that way. So his name is a little quirky because he couldn't have 13 letters in his full name either. So one of my core memories as a child was when I was in first grade in the Philippines, attending Catholic school, like a good little Catholic boy. And my teacher was recounting a story to the class about an actor who had recently died. And official news sources said that he apparently died in his sleep by committing suicide, unfortunately. And he was found the next morning with his window open in his bedroom. That one detail, as well as, you know, him dying in his sleep, led people, including my teacher, to come up with some superstitious explanations as to why he died. And she was lovely enough to share them with the class because, you know, who doesn't love a little memory, little scary memory for a child to take with you for the rest of your life with, huh? So her theory was that he had died in his sleep by an evil spirit and process called bangungot, which is essentially when you suddenly die in your sleep. And it's a mysterious act, and you just, you know, stop. Your heart stops pumping, and you just stop breathing, and then, bam, you're dead. And I was in the first grade, mind you, and I was terrified. I could not sleep. And a bangungot essentially is... It varies in different tellings, but one version is depicted as an old fat woman who is the incarnation of an evil tree or nature spirit. And she will crawl into your bedroom and mess with your dreams and sit on your chest until you stop breathing. And that's why you die. Some people just say that it's just a spirit that invades your nightmares and then you're dead the next morning. And then sometimes it's just bangungot when you just die suddenly in your sleep and it's mysterious. So again, lots of this is, you know, oral history, changes with different people in different regions and different families. But to me, I was also imagining this evil, you know, spirit that would crawl through your window and suffocate you. Because I had been told the suffocation part of that story. So I was just terrified to at all even sleep. And then it's like, what if I get choked out in my bed? Like, what the hell? So that's one scary monster of the Philippines. Another one is the Chanak. And if you've been watching Drag Race Philippines, let's talk about it. I friggin' love that series. What a great representation of Filipino drag, and it just felt so affirming and even allowed me to explore different, you know, Filipino folklore like the Chanak. And the Chanak is an evil spirit, sometimes against pregnant women, sometimes just against random passerbys, and it takes the form of an evil baby. And what you're supposed to do is, or what it wants you to do, is that you see a baby on the road or, you know, abandoned somewhere, and you, because you're a good human being, pick up the baby, you know, to take it somewhere safe and get it to the right people. And then it takes advantage of that, and it's actually an evil demon baby that when you pick it up and then you look at it, it has an ugly ass head and face, and it attacks you. Wow. I think that story should be censored because I do not want anybody to be dissuaded from picking up babies on the street. Like, come on. We also have the Chanak and the Aswang, which are kind of like a duo, like including the Chanak, like I've just told, but also in Aswang, which is essentially modern versions liken it to a vampire, which makes sense, but also it's, you know, a culturally distinct, you know, monster that kind of is like a vampire, but is also kind of like a werewolf, but is also an evil spirit. And the both of them together are evil spirits against pregnant women, and they are so vengeful that they want to curse other pregnant women, because sometimes the Aswang is a female vampire who, you know, lost her child, and the Chanak is a baby who got cursed because its mother died before she gave birth. So a Chanak is sometimes an unborn baby. And with the, you know, dominant Catholic beliefs in the Philippines, the Chanak has also been likened to an aborted fetus and has a lot of interesting connotations in that rhetoric, and how it kind of merges into, you know, local spiritual beliefs, and how, you know, religious beliefs have kind of quote-unquote corrupted it. One of the pre-pregnancy superstitions is that a bunch of monsters will be rooting for you, rooting against you, and will be making an active effort to curse you and your pregnancy and your baby. And if anything should happen to you, that more monsters will show up because of that, you know, bad luck and misfortune, which is really, really terrifying, but that's what the Chanak and the Aswang will do to you. So a lot of our superstitions also kind of relate to furniture placement, and I think it has a lot of similarities, like I said, with, you know, concepts of luck within East and Southeast Asia. There's also concepts of furniture placement, and I'm thinking of like feng shui, right? And the most glaring one to me is bed placement, and that's something my parents have always, you know, drilled into my head, is that your bed placement has to be correct, and you have to ensure that it doesn't invite any monsters and it doesn't invite any bad luck. So what that meant is that you had to have your bed not facing the door of your bedroom. So it can't be against the opposite wall of your door, because that means your feet will then be pointed to your door. And that is an invitation for an evil spirit of death to come in and drag you by your feet to the depths of hell, which is terrifying, but also kind of reminiscent of the common gut feeling that everyone has, that when their leg is not under the covers, that the monsters underneath your bed will, you know, come and get you. So seems very similar there. And, you know, monsters do exist in your bed, around your bed, outside your bed, coming to get you, and your bed is probably a monster of itself. So, you know what? Like, what are we worrying about at this point? There's also very particular placements with your clock. You can't place your clock above your door because you're also going to invite bad luck. I don't think there's an evil clock monster, but also I'm not an expert, and there probably is an evil clock monster. Who knows? Mirrors are also very finicky in superstition, and my mom has always been very, you know, quick to tell us, me and my sister, about different superstitions she has and, you know, Filipinos have about mirrors. And now essentially it kind of boils down to the fact that the people, I say people, but your reflections in the mirror are actually people or evil spirits, evil versions of yourself, and that they're out to get you. And mirrors are kind of evil, but we still have them anyways. So you have to be particular with where you place your mirrors in your home. And obviously a given is you can't break your mirrors, I guess, because then the people in the mirror dimension will come out and get you. But also you can't place your mirror against the wall. Like, you can't lean it against the wall just for temporarily, because then the spirits within the mirror will come and get you, which is terrifying. And I remember I was helping move my sister, and I recount this story this superstition to her, and I said, like, no, we have to place your mirror up now. We can't have it overnight against the wall leaning it against the wall, because then the spirits will kill us in our sleep. And she was like, and we were both very freaked out, like legitimately freaked out. And rational or not, these have very, you know, deep like guttural effects on us, because, you know, they've been implanted so heavily. But I remember that night we just decided to keep it on the floor facing up, because that's fine, because, you know, we can still see the mirror. And also, when you're moving, there's also a lot of superstitions with that. You have to have rice. You have to throw rice around your house. You have to throw salt around your house. And a similar belief to that is you always have to have full rice and salt containers, which I do. And also, you have to have holy water around your house. So a lot of different, like, indigenous and non-Catholic beliefs, followed by a Catholic belief right there. It's a lot of Filipino folk traditions that are interesting, that just, you know, kind of combine into, like, yeah, just do everything, because we want as much good luck as possible, as little bad luck as possible, and get the hell away from any monsters or any chance of seeing any monsters. We also do it with our cars, because if we don't do that, then that means you're just gonna get into a car accident, which is, you know, wouldn't want to be driving a non-rice, non-salted, non-holy watered car. I don't know about you. So we also have a lot of superstitions related to good luck, and it's not just all about evil spirits that are coming to kill you in the worst ways possible when you do slightly anything wrong or something random even. So there's a lot of ways you can get good luck, and a lot of it relates to New Year's, but also on your birthday. So both on your birthday and New Year's, because why the hell not? You should be eating long noodles, and particularly for us Filipinos, we call it pancit, which is a specific noodle dish, and its long noodles will give you a long life. So you're, you know, manifesting the opposite of a sudden death from a bangungot. But also in New Year's, you're also supposed to wear a lot of polka dots for circles, and you put a lot of fruits, spherical fruits particularly, in your bowl, because that symbolizes wealth and prosperity, and the circles represent money. Think of coins. You're also supposed to have your wallet full on New Year's, because it's kind of like manifesting wealth for the new year. So if you start off with a lot of wealth in the new year, that will bring you lots of wealth for the upcoming year. But to me, that just sounds like capitalism. But, you know, kind of makes sense. Children are also encouraged to jump when it hits midnight, because that will manifest them becoming taller. And also on New Year's Day, so January 1st, you're not supposed to clean, you're not supposed to sweep, because that means you're sweeping away and cleaning away the good luck that you just got. So you're just inviting bad luck for the year. So you're supposed to let it kind of sit and mellow and, you know, infuse into your home and into your body, I guess, and, you know, into your aura. Similarly to the sweeping, you also can't sweep at night, because that's bad luck. But I think that also relates not with sweeping away good luck, but with pissing off spirits, because you're sweeping at night, so you're getting them dirty and the spirits are active at night. And also with the wallet thing, if you're gifting someone a wallet, you're supposed to put a little bit of money, so like a few coins or even like a $5 bill in it. Otherwise, you're doing a bad and a mean-spirited thing, because that giving someone an empty wallet means you're cursing them with no money, because it's symbolically, I want you to have no money, which is a very interesting intentional thing. So I would like a wallet for Christmas, please. Okay, here's a convoluted one. If you bite your tongue, you're supposed to get a random number from a person near you. So just off the top of their head, they say a number to you, and that number will correspond to a letter of the alphabet. And the first person you think of whose name starts with that letter is thinking of you, or will die. I'm actually not sure, but let's hope it's the first one. But also, if you're having a dream and you experience and you dream of somebody dying, that means
it's an omen that they will die. And to break that omen, you have to tell the person you dreamt of that you dreamt of them dying, which just seems like a really shady superstition. And I like whoever created that because they were there to have a good time and just stir the pot.
Wait, so you're telling me you wanted Josephine to die? No, I just dreamt of her dying. Doesn't that kind of mean you want her to die, like, subconsciously? No, I don't think so. Well, I think you have to tell Josephine that you dreamt of her dying. Wait, why should I? Won't that make her think that I wanted her to die? No, it's actually a nice thing, because you have to tell Josephine that you dreamt of her dying, otherwise she will actually die. Haven't you heard of that? It's like, no. Yeah, well, it's a thing, so you have to go tell Josephine that you wanted her to die. Wait, wanted her to die or dreamt of her dying? It's the same thing. Oh, okay. That's kind of how I imagined the first conversation of that went. It's just some pot stir wanting to cause some chaos between his friends. I think that's me. But it's very funny. And okay, another core memory I had that impacted literally every time we went out, took photos, and we're Filipinos, so we take photos every second of every day of any time we take a trip or even go to the bathroom, is that you couldn't have more than 3 people in a photo. You could have 2, you could have 4, you could have as many as you want, but not 3, because the superstition went that the person in the middle of that photo would be destined to die. It's so dark, and it's just like the most basic thing that you do that can sentence someone to death, but it's true. And it also affects, and this is such a specific memory, it affects statues. Because me and my sister in the Philippines were trying to take a photo with a statue, but our parents were like, you can't do that because you're going to anger whoever that statue is of. And then them as a spirit are going to be the ones to haunt you. And because they're already dead, you're both going to die. And it was just like, what is this?
So for funerals, on the topic of death, I mean, I could have slotted this in anywhere, but for funerals and the topic of death, you have to place the body correctly. So if you thought you were done after you're dead with superstitions, you're wrong. Your feet have to face up, facing the sky or facing, you know, the earth above you, you know, when you're 6 feet under. Otherwise, you will return as an evil spirit haunting your loved ones. Or a zombie. Or both. I don't know. But just make sure your feet are up. Similar to the bed thing, but I guess that makes sense. Your coffin is your forever bed. Saddest thing ever. Now I want a comfy coffin. But I guess it doesn't matter. Also, when you're the living person, when you're a living person going to a funeral, you have to observe a bunch of different things. You can go, you know, touch the body and do all that and, like, you know, say your goodbyes, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I've seen a lot of people do that. But when you're walking away, so when you're done walking away, you cannot look back. Superhero explosion style. You cannot look back. You have to be a cool guy. Because otherwise, looking back is an invitation for the dead spirit to follow you and curse you for a, you know, prolonged amount of time, probably for life again. Similarly, after a wake or after a funeral, you can't go back home. You can't go straight back home. You can't go straight home. Got it. Syntax. You have to stop by another place, because if you go straight home, it's an invitation for the spirit to follow you and haunt you and your home. But that just seems like an asshole kind of thing to do, because you stop by a McDonald's and then you're like, yeah, this is the place you'll haunt forever. So I feel like the superstition needs to be, you have to drive to a nice, you know, park or nature reserve so that your loved one, the spirit we're talking about, can have a nice resting place. And then you can go home, because you're dead. I don't need you in my life like that anymore. I don't need you haunting my oven or something. Although some people do like being haunted, or like these supernatural encounters with spirits. And I agree, it does seem very, you know, comforting to people. And a lot of people do believe in these superstitious beliefs. And I do believe them. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of empathy from my end. So one of my aunts, she recalls all the time that she speaks with her grandmother still. Her grandmother, who's been long dead, but she still has, you know, conversations with her spirit. And she recalls that sometimes she smells her grandmother's perfume. And to her, that's a symbol that her spirit's in the room and she's, you know, making dinner or something. And then she's just chatting with her grandmother. Or sometimes the room gets cold, or, you know, her car gets cold while she's driving or something, or the environment shifts in some way. And that's a symbol for her to start talking to her grandmother because she knows she's there and she's watching over her. So not in all cases are spirits bad, or even as these funeral superstitions would tell you that even your loved one's spirits are bad. Sometimes they're nice, and sometimes you can have, weirdly enough, a posthumous relationship with people that you once loved and, you know, still love, which is kind of comforting as well. And even my grandfather, he swears by his life, because it was literally by his life, that he was saved by a witch doctor, that he was really sick for a really long time before I was born, and that he tried all the doctors. He went to a lot of hospitals and did a lot of treatments, and none of them worked and none of them made him better. But then he went to a local witch doctor, you know, practicing indigenous Ilocano beliefs and Filipino beliefs, and he was cured because of it. So these things do have an effect and do matter, at the very least, to people's lives, no matter, you know, what you believe. I participate in a lot of these, and I put a lot of my belief and superstition in them. And even when I say superstition, I am saying that I believe in a lot of these, and I participate in these funeral ones. Like, yes, like, as I grow up as an adult and, you know, morbidly enough, people start dying and I go to their funerals, I will be observing these very rituals, because, I don't know, it's just something ingrained in me that makes me want to observe them. And it's interesting. I guess it kind of connects me to my ancestors. It, you know, maintains this spirituality that, you know, I guess I kind of need, and also just roots me within my culture and gives me rituals that I can pass on to different people I love as well, and maybe my children, or, you know, and keep these to me valuable parts of my culture alive. And one of my favorite parts about Halloween is not just, you know, the Western trick-or-treating, getting up in costumes, or at this point, getting drunk, but a lot of, you know, Latina and Hispanic cultures celebrate Day of the Dead, and the Philippines is one of them. And if you've ever watched Coco, I relate to that movie a lot. Even though it's about, you know, a Mexican Day of the Dead, it resembles a lot of what the Philippines does. And we also have white cemeteries. When I visited the Philippines, I visited my great grandmother's, I believe, grave, and it was like a grave box painted white, and a lot of different people were there too, visiting their ancestors, talking to them, praying, you know, remembering them. And what's so sweet, and I love this part of the culture, is we would be bringing snacks to the grave. We'd literally be bringing bags of chips and a bottle of soda, you know, their favorite snacks from when they were alive, and offering it to the grave. And then we'd bring their photos to keep them alive. And their spirits are still with us, especially on that one, you know, hallowed day, that it's a time for us to remember. It's a time for us to, you know, still be grateful for our ancestors and show that with our food. And it was just a really, really affirming ritual to be a part of. And on that heartwarming note, that is a wrap. Thank you for listening to this second episode of the Strandcast.
I hope it was a little spooky. I hope it is a little insightful into the weird little quirky childhood and cursed memories I've had, and also the very interesting mingles of cultures and, you know, highlighting of my Filipino experience. And also, I hope you enjoyed my little intro. That was kind of fun, I'm going to be honest, to do. But also, what an embarrassing story. But I hope that got people a few laughs or a few smiles. Tune in to the next episode of the Strandcast. I've got a lot of good things planned. You'll be able to meet new people. And it'll be a good one. I promise. I promise. It'll be a really good one. So, until then, bye-bye.